Hello, and welcome to another installment of Podcast 360. I'm your moderator, Melinda Stevens, with Gastroenterology Consultant. With us today is Julie Klevner, who is Director of the Pediatric Gastrointestinal Motility Center and Assistant Professor of Pediatrics at Columbia University Irving Medical Center in New York City. She is with us today to discuss the management of upper gut motility disorders in children, a topic she spoke about at the North American Society for Pediatric Gastroenterology, Hepatology, and Nutrition annual meeting. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Klevner.
Thank you, Melinda. I'm very pleased and very excited to participate in today's podcast, as the topic is of high interest and relevance to the practicing pediatric gastroenterologist.
Is there often a delay in diagnosing gastrointestinal motility disorder among children? How can gastroenterologists approach this?
Of course. Unfortunately, there's often a delay in diagnosing a gastrointestinal motility disorder in children. Children often present with nonspecific signs and symptoms, which are often mistaken for gastroesophageal reflux. Most patients end up on a variety of acid suppressive medications at various doses for a prolonged period of time before motor disorder is considered. Many children undergo several expensive, invasive procedures that are non-revealing prior to considering a motility program.
What do you think is the ideal diagnostic tool for esophageal and gastric motor disorders in children? Are more tools still needed?
So assessing an upper gut motor disorder often requires many diagnostic tools. It is not unusual for a pediatric patient to undergo an upper endoscopy imaging prior to embarking on a manometry study. Esophageal manometry and intraduodenal motility are useful tools to diagnose dysmotility of the upper gut. And while they're critical in understanding motility disorders, their results should always be taken in context of the clinical picture and presenting symptoms. Esophageal manometry is one of the most common procedures performed in pediatrics, and an advent of high-resolution manometry offers particular advantages for children because the study is easier to perform, though it still has its challenges, and provides unparalleled insight into the esophageal physiology. With the addition of impedance to high-resolution esophageal manometry, the clinical significance of motor abnormalities can be assessed in the context of effective or ineffective bolus clearance. While less commonly performed, the use of intraduodenal manometry has become important in the diagnosis of gastroparesis and pseudo-obstruction in children presenting with upper tract symptoms. As with esophageal manometry, high-resolution manometry technology has also been applied. Absolutely more diagnostic tools that are validated in children are needed. Continued research of non-invasive diagnostic modalities may lead to less discomfort while maintaining a high degree of sensitivity and specificity for the diagnosis of these disorders.
What are the main differences between managing children and adults with GI motility disorders that gastroenterologists need to remember?
So I often hear that question, and I think it's an important one to address. It's important to remember that children are not just small adults and that pathophysiology of pediatric motility disorders can be very different than what's reported in adults. And performing and interpreting motility evaluations in children presents its unique challenges and is complicated by technical difficulties and the patient cooperation. Another very important challenge is related to the development and maturation of the gastrointestinal system. After birth, motor processes begin to mature until they develop adult characteristics. These processes, ranging from enteric nervous system maturation to contractile patterns, are still being elucidated. Although there are published indications for pediatric manometry studies, the difficulty of interpreting evaluations given the sparse child control data, most of it is extrapolated from adult studies, remains a challenge. The lack of child-specific normative data can make analysis more difficult, and care must be taken to avoid overinterpretation. For example, we often use Chicago classifications, which are used to diagnose esophageal motor disorders, and the normatives were based on adult data. We've applied these parameters to pediatrics, despite very few studies validating its use in children. And then another very important issue is that we have limited treatment options that are approved for children, often leading specialists to use agents off-label to help our pediatric patients.
In your opinion, when should a gastroenterologist refer a patient with vomiting and reflux to a motility specialist? Are there often delays in referring?
Patients should be referred to a motility specialist for a thorough evaluation when symptoms are intractable or refractory to standard medical therapy, or when there is a strong suspicion of an upper gut motor disorder at the onset. We certainly see delays in referral either because the symptoms are not specific, the wrong diagnosis was made, or that there's no pediatric motility specialist in the area. And all these tend to delay the referring process.
What is the key takeaway for gastroenterologists to know about the management of upper gut motility disorders in children?
I think the key is to really understand that motility evaluation by an expert in the field plays an integral part when workup is non-revealing and symptoms don't respond to conventional medical therapy. Motility disorders in children are not uncommon and should always remain in the differential diagnosis. The pharmacotherapy currently available is very limited, and new medications are certainly needed. Hopefully, with the continued basic science advances in the function of the enteric nervous system, such as the identification of new receptors, new compounds will emerge, and the treatment and prognosis of children with primary motility disorders will improve.
Thank you again for joining us today, Dr. Klevner.
My pleasure. Thank you for the invite.